Welcome to a brand new season of Unknown Artist. I'm your host, Nikki E. Taylor, and this is Nagme.
I remember I met you at an open mic. It was at the Courcelle.
Yes.
And I just was like, whoa, who is this woman? And her songs, I was just pinned to my chair. And I had a sketchbook, and I was just drawing the people that, like, I really wanted to befriend. But I was too afraid to go and talk to people. I wasn't really new to Montreal, but just kind of didn't really feel like that, you know, that social drive. And I just was like, I will go, and I will leave a trail behind. And then if I find these people again in the future and we talk, great. and I think I did this quick sketch, and I was like, okay, here you go, bye.
And since then, I've listened to your amazing music. How's your Montreal experience as a musician been?
Yeah, I guess so. So my musical journey kind of started in California. I lived in San Francisco for several years, and it wasn't until the final year that I lived there that I, like, actually started performing my own music. Like, all this time, I always thought it was one of those things that I would do when I'm older. And then there was this moment where I was like, oh my God, I'm grown up and I'm still not pursuing my own dream. Mm-hmm. And I kind of had this moment of panic where I was like, I got to start writing music if I'm ever going to start writing music. And then I realized that it came to me a lot more naturally than I originally thought it would happen. I really thought that, like, I could never write my own music. That's something that other people do, you know?
Yeah.
it felt like all the experiences, everything I was going through, like my desire to move back home, my desire to be understood by my friends, by my colleagues, my ex-boyfriends, like actual partners, like it was just kind of flowing through really easily. And then one day, just, you know, through, like, singing about really wanting to leave my job and moving back to Canada, one day I lost my job. And it was kind of a deer in headlights kind of moment where I'd just been, you know, complaining about something for so long. And then when it happened, I was like, oh, crap, like, the moment is here. But I've known for a very long time that I want to move to Canada and I want to pursue music. But, like, I think through all of that time, I just kept thinking about it in a very vague way. Like, it was something that would happen in the future, and future Nagme is going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it happened, it all, like, it happened so fast. I was laid off. I bought my ticket to move back to Canada, like, within a week. And I decided that I was going to go and live with my parents because I wanted to kind of save some money, or I wanted to not spend money. So I moved in with my parents, and it was kind of strange. You know, I went from San Francisco living a pretty comfortable and, like, lovely life in, like, a dreamy city to living in Pierrefonds, which translates to rock bottom. So the poetic me was freaking out.
Like, why would they name a place rock bottom?
I think it has something to do with, like, the structure, like the way that the city is made. It's actually, like, on a riverbed. It's like rocks.
Yeah, like in French, I guess it probably is, like, you know, solid foundations.
So it's something like that. But like, to me in that moment, it just was like, oh my God. In Farsi, we have an expression, it's Dastas Poderos Tabar Migadi. It's like your arms lower than your legs, like you're literally, like, hanging. And I just had this image of me just, like, moving back to Canada, moving back to Pierrefonds, and I just decided that I gotta snap out of it. And I had to figure it out from scratch again, you know, like, I had to go and build a community. Start playing the same songs in front of new audiences. And, like, you know, through all that time, like, I went through a massive shift in my life. You know, I was laid off from the job that, like, brought me to California. My ex-lover left me, and the same week, he moved back and I moved to Canada. There was just so much happening. And, you know, I didn't really, for the longest time, I didn't really feel like performing music, you know? I didn't really feel like facing the world. I just kind of wanted to, like, hide in my childhood room in rock bottom. And I pursued a collaboration with one of my friends from California. We went to Iceland together. I went back to San Francisco, and we performed a few shows together. And that's when I realized that, like, I don't want to do this music thing alone. Like, the most fun I ever had was connecting with other musicians. And that was, like, thanks to my first band in California. We were called the Transcontinentals. We played, like, 3 songs and 1 show together. And then with Sam, who was my really good friend, and we were Nagme and the Sams. So whoever was in the band was either a Nagme or a Sam.
Do you have a song from that time that you maybe haven't played or that was like a strong favorite of that time?
Actually, yeah, we do. Well, we played a few together. There was a song that one of the first songs I ever wrote. It's called Millionaire's Insomnia, and we played it. He made it super beautiful with the piano, and he actually covered it a few times. And then there was another one called Like You Do, and he used to, like, take out the accordion and, like, play this super haunting like accordion over this song. Ooh. About, like, you know, being like chased with the ideas of, you know, like, with your traumas, like your traumas showing up in your relationships, and you're just like, oh my God, I'm not over this. I didn't deal with this problem in my life. I neglected it. And then kind of trying to move past it and then seeing it at every corner of a new challenging part of a new relationship. So that song is called Like You Do. And I hadn't played it for quite some time, but that was a favorite from the Nagme and the Sams era.
Do you want to play it?
Yeah, sure.
I'd love to hear it.
Try, what would you bother coming inside? The sun had set on hard times, here your ghost hides. It frightened me. No moon on the rise, I hear the howling. I shut the door, you come in through the window. Close my eyes and there you go. Shut my heart, you show up in the rear view. It's up to me to let you go. It's up to me to let you go.
Your voice for a couple of like many reasons, but a couple of things that really like jump out at me is that I know you're from Iran and I hear the Iranian sort of influence, and then I also know that you love Nirvana and
so very much hear Nirvana.
Really? I love you, the Nirvana influence. Yeah,
I feel like I hear that strong like grunge influence in your music mixed with more like traditional Iranian music. Does that strike a chord with you?
Totally.
Yeah.
So, okay, like funny story, but like I grew up in Iran until the age of 11. And you know, like access to popular music was very kind of like, you know, it was slim picking. But I do remember kind of being really influenced by my favorite cousins, you know, and they used to listen to Guns N' Roses, Nirvana, and Metallica. I wasn't really huge on Guns N' Roses. I kind of wasn't really huge on Metallica at first either. But then, like, I think when we moved to Canada through, like, being really, through really missing them, I was like, okay, I'll listen to these bands. So I really got into Metallica. I, like, fell in love with Metallica. And, like, really, really started, like, religiously listening to Nirvana, too. And I had this poster of Kurt Cobain, and I was just like, oh, my God, he's so cute, he's adorable. And this is, like, 1998. Like, we migrated in 1998. And one day I was talking to one of my classmates. I don't remember how it came out, but I remember saying how much I was in love with Kurt Cobain. And then my friend was like, yeah, it's really too tragic that he died. And that's when I found out that I had been, like...
Oh, no.
That the love of my life was dead. I was devastated. I was just like, wait, what? Like, that means no more Nirvana music? And then I, like, really started getting into the Foo Fighters, and
oh, really?
I love David Grohl, and it just kind of, I don't know, I was just really inspired by this story. Like, I've always really loved Metallica. I don't care what happened with Napster. I do think that they were, even though they were rich people, they were standing up for the music industry as they thought it was, as it was really shifting, and...
Yeah, I think that was the first time that I realized that the music industry was, like, forever changed.
Forever.
Because, like, once you had, like, downloads... and people were constantly downloading from like Napster and then LimeWire and then Torrents and you know, took off from there, and the music industry still has no idea what it's doing as a result.
Yeah, it's just kind of been like, yeah, and everyone is making money except for the musicians. Well, no, that's a gross, like, that's not true.
I think it's just people are making money kind of in a random way. Like,
yeah.
Like, some people make huge amounts of money, and if you were to look at how that happened, it's just like, you can't replicate that.
Yeah. But what's really crazy to see is that there are a lot of people who can, like, if you, for example, if you are a booking agent, if you're a venue or a producer or a master or mixing engineer, you don't need to be the big name in the industry in order to make a living. But musicians need to be made, like, they need to be like above everybody else in order to just kind of be able to just break even. Like, yeah. Even musicians that I admire, like, there's a lot of musicians in the Canadian scene that I'm super proud of, and I've been following them, and money is still something that is, like, very taboo for us musicians to talk about, whereas, like, it just seems like the industry itself, there is a lot of money being invested in the industry, but it's not always coming back to the musicians. Like, the musicians do need to spend money in order to put their professional package out there, but, you know, it's not a given that they'll be making any money. So it's been complex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's kind of a wild west, like, right now. You can kind of just, like, find your own way, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, the internet is a great tool. Like, you can put your music out there, like, no other time in the world. Like, you don't have to go to Berlin for your music to be heard in Berlin.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to go to Australia for people literally on the other side of the world to hear your music. But at the same time, in order to, like, what does it mean for, like, two people to hear your music out there? How do you make it heard? How do you make it heard? Like, there's a lot of complex algorithms, and I think there's a lot of there's a lot of tricks. But, you know, it's not enough to just be a musician nowadays. You got to be an amazing social media marketer,
mm-hmm.
content creator. You got to be your own manager. You got to be very, very good at handling rejection and, like, self-motivation. You got to be your own life coach.
Yep, you got to be your own everything.
You got to be your own everything. But, you know, at the same time, it's really precious to be able to, like, express yourself, and just, I would trade it for anything for those moments of connection that you get.
Yeah.
That's the dream, literally. The dream is to have an impact. And I think that's another thing that, like, I don't know, I kind of got sidetracked. I didn't really talk about, like, what happened with the different iterations of the band here. But I think that's kind of, you know, like, my previous work was also personal. It was all about kind of, like, trying to give myself the strength to realize my own dreams. And, like, in the future, when I'm writing music, I kind of want to keep in mind the parts of the world that I want to have an influence on, like, the topics in the world that I want to have an influence on, that I have something important to say, and to dig deep to see, like, you know, if there is a part of me that wants to influence people, like, how would I use this platform? How do I want to influence people? Like, what words do I want to put out there? And I think it's a lot of pressure sometimes, you know,
mm-hmm.
you can really get in your head, because there's so much going on in our world right now, and I think we need to stop being silent about it. So it's a very important time to use our voice, and
mm-hmm.
I'm, like, so grateful for the fact that I can use my voice. And, you know, sometimes it feels like it's echoing in nothingness, but other times it feels so important to just keep screaming, even if it's screaming in nothingness.
Yeah, even if it's just you, it's good.
Yeah, just, like, one less, like, mental person out there dealing with
get
my
it
issues
out.
And screaming.
Yeah, that's something that I find as a songwriter. A lot of my music has been just, like, incidental. Like, I am feeling something, I am inspired to write something, and I do it, but it's not necessarily deliberate. And I think that that's something that I would like to get to a place where I'm doing very deliberate stuff, rather than just letting all my feelings out. How do you feel about that? Have you written any music that's, like, you deliberately wrote it for a purpose?
Yeah, I mean, had a few songs. There was actually one song. There was one song that it was kind of creepy how it happened. Like, I was sleeping on a plane. It was one of those, like, super hangover sleeps in a plane where, you know, like the pressure in the plane is making you feel even more like messed up than you actually are. and I was like fast asleep, and I woke up and I had this like, I had this story that was in my mind and it woke me up. And like, I wasn't dreaming about it. I just like woke up and I was like, every year there are hundreds of women in Iran that get executed while like protecting their honor. And I just like, I remembered this one story. There was a woman who, like full disclosure, this is going to get a little heavy. It might be a little trauma inducing. But there was a story of a woman who was meeting up with her lover, with her boyfriend in a cemetery of all places. I guess that's where she felt the safest. They got attacked by a gang of hooligans and the boyfriend ran away. The people trapped her and gang raped her.
Oh my God.
I
think I remember this story.
It didn't really make the rounds.
I think you've
doesn't.
Told me about this.
Yeah. and then she like I don't know at what point she did this, but she grabbed a rock and she killed one of the guys.
Good.
And right, like that's kind of my reaction
like,
too. I'm just like this fucking poor woman. Excuse my language. Excuse this story. I know it's heavy. We need to talk about this. This is one of the things that we're silent about for way too fucking long.
Absolutely.
And I was like, oh my God, I need to like, I got on the plane Wi-Fi. I never get the plane Wi-Fi. It's so expensive. And I was like, I need to like Wi-Fi. I need to like research this right now. And I couldn't find anything about her. And I found something out about this other woman. And the story was, it was also super tragic, but it was a little bit like more complicated because, The story was that she was hired to do this interior decorating job for this man's house, and then she went there. He allegedly tried to rape her. She stabbed him, and then she was executed because the judge said that, you know, you bought a knife and you brought it in there, so this is first degree murder. It was intentional. You wanted to kill him.
But like, you can't exactly like, the same thing can't happen reverse. You can't like, you know, arrest someone for having a penis, you know, like,
no, right? Like and also like, what kind of world do we live in that a woman is like, I have a job interview tomorrow and just in case I need to fucking buy a knife. And I mean, like, this is not an isolated like fear that only women in Iran have. Like, how many women do you and I know who have pepper spray in their purse, who like walk home at the end of a restaurant shift with like their keys in their hands because terrified. And we've created a world where like I don't really sing that song very much because it feels super heavy for me too, and like it's really weird for me to sing it because I feel like I'm condoning violence, but at the same time I'm not. I just want to be in a world where women feel safe and they feel heard and
where they don't have to do that.
They don't have to do that. And so that was like, that was one of the songs that I wrote that was very deliberate. Like, I felt like I had no say in it. Like, it was her story. It was something about like the story of what happened to her, how nobody believed her from the moment that like she was accused. It didn't matter. And that's kind of the case of women in Iran, no matter what their story is, if they are, if they kill in self-defense, it's, you know, it's automatically considered first-degree murder, whereas that's not the case with self-defense. Like, it shouldn't be penalized that way. It's just such a messed up story. I don't even know where to begin. And like, it gives me goosebumps. And, you know, I'm nowhere, like, I'm not related to this person, but I can, like, I remember reading about her mother and how she donated her organs so that this person lives on, you know? And it just, like, the bridge of that song is one of the nicest lines. It's just one line. It's, I won the battle, you won the war. That's, you know, that what did she accomplish? She couldn't even protect herself in that situation. She didn't change the laws. They still judge women based on the story told from like the man's perspective, and people still continue to be executed in Iran. Women continue to be executed in Iran and fearing for their lives. So that was one of the things that I deliberately wrote about, and then subsequently was totally terrified of sharing it. And only in very intimate settings do I ever share that song. And I always like started off by like making some sort of excuse for myself, just being like, by the way, I don't condone violence. This isn't about that. Like this, just like read up on the story, make your own judgment. But this is a big problem in our world that like women are still terrified.
And also that you're intimately connected to. I mean, there's still the sense of having, like there is the science to back up experiencing trauma through multi-generations, through your DNA, right? If your grandparents, if your great-grandparents are living in traumatic circumstances, that'll like kind of trickle down to you and give you like some very lasting effects. And so like this is not, I don't know what your family history is, but coming from that place, like, is very intimately connected to you.
Yeah.
And I think that's amazing that you're talking about it, that you're sharing it, even if it's not very much, just talking about it now, I think is amazing. And I'm glad that someone's talking about it.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those, like, secret lives of families and secret lives of women. You know, like the secret burden that we carry and mm-hmm. we never want to talk about it. And we just kind of want to like keep the peace and keep the norm. And I think it's an interesting time in our lives to speak up and to say no.
Mm-hmm.
So there's the first line of this song is in Farsi. It's Esmam Hast Sharoyer. And it means my name is Sharoyer. It's not the real name of this this particular character, but Sharoyer is like, it's a puppy, it's kind of the symbol of a martyr, and in Iran the martyr is really like the soldier who died at war. But I really do think that these women are martyrs too, like they're sacrificed, their lives are sacrificed, they're not sacrificing themselves, like they would prefer to live, obviously, like their survival instinct has been very strong, but the fact that they are dead means that I get to tell the story and I get to try and change the future. So I do think they're martyrs. So this song is called Sharoyer.
Said you don't need me.
The lyrics of that are so powerful. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you. I love it.
Goosebumps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's thank you. Thanks for letting me share that.
Absolutely. Thank you for sharing that. And even though I do not have the same experience, I feel like I can relate as a woman. And you know, especially the line you said, I'm a dead woman talking, because like women are very rarely able to talk. And then depending on political tides, you know, like when, you know, if we look back 50, 60, 70 years, when, you know, people who were very liberal and left leaning and vocal about it, soon after, a few decades later, they were put on lists. They were the first people executed, you know, like this is something that happened within the last century in North America. And so that's something that personally, as like a somewhat outspoken woman who talks about all sorts of things that are like, I currently write for a blog called Tabooless. I'm actively saying a lot of things that women historically have not been allowed to say, or have not been included in the conversation, or their opinions have not been valued. And that's something that, like, every now and again, I definitely have difficulty sleeping because I'm worried that the things that I say now are going to be my death sentence.
Yeah, it's really crazy. Like, we feel like, yeah, we're in North America, everything is great, but then there's things like, you know, like I was having a really hard time just following the whole Kavanaugh affair, and then at the end of it, like, zero consequences, you know, and like you're deemed as somebody who's like being overly sensitive, you're exaggerating, you're probably power hungry, why now? There's all these, like when women don't speak out, they're like, well, why didn't you speak? And then when you speak, they're like, why now? What's different now? Is it because he has power? And it's like, well, no, it's to prevent him from keeping power too. Like there's there's a lot of things at play, and it's not easy as a woman to be believed, to be heard.
Tell me a little bit. I know you just came out with an album.
Yeah, I did.
So tell me about that.
I did it. It was one of like, it really felt like my PhD journey. Like it definitely felt like all of the ups and downs of just being like, I believe in myself. What the hell am I doing? Oh my God. No, never going to finish this. Never going to graduate. It was kind of a dream of mine from the moment that I moved back to Montreal. Like, I mentioned earlier that like I knew I wanted to pursue music, and I knew in order, I wanted to put out an album, because it was just one of those things that, you know, every time I was going to a concert and discovering a new musician, I was immediately going on Spotify and following them and listening to their music and adding them to my little like playlist, which is now like 2,000 songs long at this point. Like, somebody follow my playlist. It's really good.
Wait, how do we find your playlist?
It's it's called The Southern Shores Listen To.
On Spotify?
On Spotify, yeah. Probably find it on my actual artist page. But it's just been like a compilation of songs.
Which, for everyone listening, how do we find your actual artist page?
It's a self-titled album. So it's called Negme and the Southern Shores, which is also the name of the band. So this is, it's kind of it's a 9-song album, and they're all songs except for, actually, no, that's not true. Some of them were written very early on when I first started to write music. Like Millionaire's Insomnia is like probably the second song I ever wrote. And then Talking to Myself is like the last song that I wrote. And it was sort of like about like starting a new relationship here in Montreal. But everything in between has kind of been a journey of like discovering that I really don't want to be doing what I was doing in California, like living far away from my family, working for somebody else's dream, and then kind of having a hard time being understood and having my heart broken, you know, having the... one of my favorite songs on the album is Dot, 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 and I literally wrote it the day after I was laid off. It started out as like a very somber song, and then when I started playing it, when I put it to music and like eventually started playing with a band, it's like our rock and roll anthem.
So like triumphant.
The triumphant. It was kind of like, well, I guess I'm going to go and follow my dream. And then now it's kind of like, yeah, bitch, I followed my dream. That's exactly the tone. So it felt very much like one of those things that I threw myself into, having zero idea what it took, and recognizing that like I don't have any of the skills necessary to like start a project, because I didn't want it to be an acoustic, like a solo acoustic album. I wanted it to be a rock and roll album, because like I grew up with Alanis Morissette, mm-hmm. and like Metallica. I really wanted that full band experience.
And you have that full band experience. Like, you have a good band.
Yeah. And I got very lucky. So our whole band came together. So this was the kicker. Our entire band, like everybody who is on Negme and the Southern Shores, the album, I found through Craigslist. So I was in New York, and I like kind of had this one of those experiences where it just was like, okay, girl, you need to get your life together. Like, where do you start? Like, you want to make music, you want to have a band, but you haven't done anything. You keep on buying tickets to leave Montreal. How are you going to root yourself? And I was like, maybe I'll put an ad on Craigslist, and then this way it'll be real for me. Like, I'll meet people through like forcing myself to put myself out there. And the first person who wrote to me was Don, who was my drummer for the next 3 years. And we started rehearsing in his basement. He had this like awesome basement, all of the drumming toys. He had like a piano. He had all sorts of sound equipment there. And we would like go and meet him at the bus station and go to the South Shore. And that's kind of where the name came from. We had like a Google Drive document called Negme and the Southern Shores, just as a joke. And then one time when somebody asked what's the name of the band, I said, I guess that's it. And also it's kind of like the stories of how my life like imploded in California. So it's like, it's a little reference to like California, Southern Shores, and La Rive Sud in Montreal. So first came Don. We did have another bassist at the beginning, and he also was somebody that I collaborated with. We started recording some demos together, and then I kind of got into politics, you know, like...
You ran for your region, right?
Yeah, I ran in the municipal election in Rock Bottom. Because, like, being out there and being a musician out there, like, I found it just really impossible for me to, like, get around with all my equipment. And I was like, public transportation sucks. There's zero nightlife here. There are no cafes. I love going to cafes. Like, I need to change this place. And I was really passionate about it. And I would have loved to be elected to make a difference there. But that wasn't what happened. But during that time, we also kind of, like, had a little bit of a band hiatus because we had met Seth, also on Craigslist. And Seth had just moved to Canada from Minneapolis, and he was here with his partner who was going to McGill. And
fantastic guitar player.
Yeah, amazing guitar player. So basically, we just kind of, like, took all those demos and we're like, but Seth's not on them, you know? And, like, we didn't create any space for him on there. So we decided to scrap that project. And at that point, our bassist, David, was also kind of stepping down as the bassist. So again, you know, faithful Craigslist brought Tim into our lives. So then we were, like, the whole unit. We were Nagme, Don, Seth, and Tim. And we just kind of had a crazy summer. We were playing as many as, like, 3 gigs a week sometimes. We played everywhere. We played at the FMF station.
Which was, like, such a good location.
Beautiful. With,
right,
like,
on the
sun
water.
Setting. Oh,
yeah.
My God. we played Grumpy's, Rutopia, just whatever gigs were thrown our way, we were like, yes. And I was just blown away by the dedication of these men who, you know, I didn't really, like, have a lot of money to offer them other than what we were bringing in through the gigs. And, like, week after week, they were just bringing their A game, you know, their positive attitude and determination. And, like, they made me see a side of these songs that I never saw before. Like, I always... Don used to say this thing that I never realized I was doing that, but I used to say things like, oh, these are just silly little songs I wrote. You know, it was just this, like, lack of confidence with what I had created. Because, again, like, music wasn't something I grew up with doing. You know, it was something that I had to just convince myself I wanted to, no matter what, I was going to do it because I believed in myself. But I didn't realize just how much, like, shit-talking I had to put up with on my own side, and also not to mention that it's not really a piece of cake being a woman in this industry. Like, it's not easy being a woman. It's not really a given being a woman of color either. Like, you know, I don't see many Persian women in the scene. It's really, really rare for me to come across another woman of color. And when I see them, I'm just like, yes! Yes! Our parents are cool with it!
And there's something really cool about, like, something that I can relate to as a woman in music, is, and I primarily played with men in bands, and it's just a really uniquely interesting and rewarding experience to be that believed in and supported by a group of men.
Yeah.
When you're it's all your music, but they are elevating it, they're supporting you, they're bringing your vision to, like, fruition. And it's just, it's so nice. That,
absolutely.
That never happens.
It never happens. And you're kind of touching on a really important point. It's like that woman in leadership position, it's so, like, I didn't ever have that until I had the Southern Shores, you know? And it was something so personal, so it felt that much more rewarding to be in a position of leadership for something that was, like, my life. You know, these were my stories, and, like, they were just like, this is yours. Like, we're just here to embellish this. And, like, embellish it they did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I just absolutely love those guys. Like, they were all, like, it was like a little family unit. And We always had each other's backs, and you know, whenever we were kind of feeling like we were being wronged by a bouncer or a booking agent, like they were all like, okay, cool, like whatever, like let's just walk away. I'm like, no, I'm gonna go and speak out against this. And then they're like, all right, Nagme, go and sass them. And it was very empowering, and it was great. So we did like one whole summer from like when we met Tim. We just did like a gung-ho summer of just playing every gig imaginable, and then we got exhausted. We're like, all right, cool, like what's next? And at that point we had met Simon from Serotonin Studio, and also at this time it was, I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I booked the studio time right before an operation. I had like a cyst in my salivary gland, so being the hypochondriac that I am, I thought that I will probably never sing again. So there was a part of me that like wanted to record these songs in case I can never sing again.
I'm so glad you can.
I know. And if anything, it really like opened up my voice. You know, I don't have that like pressing anxiety that like something is growing in my inside of me, you know. Mm-hmm. And my throat doesn't get dry anymore when I'm singing. So it was it was a beautiful experience, and like just as much as I loved the band, I loved working with Simon Petracchi. Like Serotonin Studio is this like super cozy and like really beautiful environment. You can really tell like studios are so important, and like everyone that you walk into has its own vibe, and you can really tell that he's put a lot of love into that space. And we had a lot of fun there. We recorded over the course of one whole weekend. And, you know, like, pretty much all the solos, the bass lines, the drum, everything that was kind of like the bedrock of the album was created over that weekend. There were a few solos that Seth wanted to revisit. We got another friend, Frank, to play the organ and clavinet. From Minnesota, and that's kind of a part of Seth's musical family in Minnesota. And Tim played the piano and the Rhodes on Millionaire's Insomnia and It All. So we really kept it in house. It was a very intimate project. It was fantastic. And then what was kind of, you know, as music goes sometimes, bands are kind of like a time capsule. Like, mm-hmm. I remember it, like Seth really like talking to me about this. It's just like, it's a time capsule, you know, it's like to commemorate a time and space and relationships that you have with certain musicians. And as luck would have it, as soon as we finished this album, Tim moved to BC and Seth moved back to Minneapolis. And Don also thought that it was time for a new chapter. So he left the band too, but I got to have the release party with Seth and Tim and a really good friend, Kevin, who subbed in for Don, and he like stepped in at the last second. And well, not last second, like we did have quite a bit of time to bring him up to speed. And he did a beautiful job. And now with Tim and Seth being gone, Kevin and I are playing music together, and we're doing things a little differently. Like sometimes he plays the drums, sometimes he plays the vibraphone, and when he plays the vibraphone, it's so magical. And everybody's always like, who's that? Who's my homie with the vibraphone? Is he coming back? So I've been very fortunate to work with some stellar musicians, and like the luck just like, I hope that I continue to meet incredible people through music. I do want some feminine energy in my band, though. I've noticed, like you mentioned, that we tend to like play.
Well, there's just so many men in the music scene that it's so much easier to just find a group of men to play with.
And another thing that's actually kind of empowering is that there's a lot of front women. So a lot of, like, I can't really collaborate with a lot of women because they're so busy doing their own stuff and they're writing their own music, and they don't really want to, like, I don't really want to make them sing my songs. I want them to be kick-ass singing their own songs. So it's kind of a good problem to have.
It is.
it just means we're kicking ass in our own, like, in our own band. So it's great.
Well, I'm excited to see what project you come up with next. And in the meantime, do you want to play us out with a song from your album? Dot, 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 or something else?
Oh, dot, dot, dot could be cool. Sure.
About us, and here you are across from the table with the scores. Forgoing this part of the process, don't get me wrong, I know it's for the best. You've been afraid to cut your losses and need to leave the mess. Now the showdown begins, the curtains will unveil.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like, subscribe, share, become a patron. I'll see you next week.